Welcome to Local SEO Today. On this podcast, John Fong interviews business professionals and entrepreneurs in many fields to uncover challenges and successes in business ownership. Our goal is to provide you with insights into the entrepreneurship journey and give you tips and advice from real experience. Brought to you by Local SEO Search, based in Toronto, Canada.
Marsha Pledger is a freelance business journalist, author, and content creator. She has been a reporter and columnist in Cleveland, sharing stories of reinvention, either online, in print, or with organizations. She's the author of a book and a 10-year-old column called My Biggest Mistake and How I Fixed It, as well as a ghostwriter and editor for executives in various roles, including books. Welcome, Marsha. How are you doing
today?
Thank
you. Thanks for asking me to be part of your podcast.
Well, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to joining us. I'm looking forward to this podcast because you bring a lot of value in some of the audience members who are listening. So let's start off with, if you don't mind, just telling me a little bit more about yourself, who you are and what do you do as in terms of profession?
Okay. Well, I've been a business journalist for my entire career. So that's a long time, like 3 decades. And so I've covered a lot of different things, but most of my time has been as a business journalist. But now one of those things I did was cover a series called Reinvention. And now I'm in the midst of my own reinvention because I just left the Cleveland Plain Dealer 4 months ago. And that's the state's largest newspaper. And while I've always done freelance on the side, always, my entire career, well, now my focus is going to be freelance business journalist. And I also, my latest interest has been covering the marijuana industry, okay, just because it's one of the fastest growing industries in the country. And not just our country, but look what you guys got going on.
Yeah, here in Canada, just recently legalized. So I'm not sure if that's the direction you guys are heading, but definitely staying on top of the forefront, right? And
we're a long way from that. And I think we're up to 36 states, okay, that have legal marijuana, medical marijuana, I'm sorry, yes, and 11 recreational. And okay, so one of the things that I'm moving into, aside from writing for publications in that space, I'm also co-creator and developer of a local cannabis medical marijuana summit called the Ohio Cannabis Health Summit. And we just put on our first one 3 months ago, and about 500 people showed up. And so our next one is for two days, and we're expecting at least 1,500.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So before we get into your new venture, can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, yes, 30 years of experience, and that's a lot in terms of, you know, valuable insights, learning about a lot of local businesses and how you were able to even interview a lot of them on your column, right? So was this a career path that you chosen, or did you go to school with this in mind, or what?
Yes. So I always wanted to be a journalist since I was in high school. I mean, nobody really knows what they want to do in high school. Well, most people don't. But so, you know, initially I thought, oh, I'm going to be an attorney. I watched some movie on TV and it was somebody who was poor and couldn't afford an attorney, and they got, you know, sent to prison forever. And so I just knew I was going to be an attorney. And then I realized that I'm really not cut out for any kind of a job that's going to really connect me too much, because I'd probably be a drunk, you know, like, you know, my father was a social worker, for instance, and he had challenges because he cared too much. But I wanted to make a difference. So I kind of fell into journalism because I wrote for it in high school and chose that as a path in college, but I wanted to make a difference and I wanted to be able to help others. So my idea, well, that was the idea anyway, was to be a journalist because you're in and out of people's lives. You're not bored ever. You're constantly learning new things. So I thought it was a good career path.
So were you at the same job for over 30 years?
No. So just because I told you that's how I thought it was going to go doesn't mean it did go that way. So yeah, so my first job, I'm from Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay.
And went to the University of Missouri Columbia, their journalism program. And I thought I was going to do that, but life doesn't actually work that way. So I applied all across the country and ended up in Las Vegas, of all places.
Oh, wow.
And so I later covered tourism, which was the start of my business path, you know, which is tourism and marketing. One of the hottest tourist places in the country to cover tourism. Yeah. But it didn't start out that way. I covered crime, you know, so for probably 4 years, you know, and it was terrible. You know, it was gangs, shootings, and hostage situations, and just negativity in, of every kind that you can imagine. Bank robberies, and the list goes on. And so I knew that wasn't for me, and I definitely had to get into business, because there is a business side to every story. I don't care if we're talking sports or whatever. It's entertainment. It's all about the money in the end.
Wow. So your last stint at being a columnist and your local journalism, how long did you stay there for?
So I was in Las Vegas for 7 years.
Okay.
And while I worked there at the Las Vegas Review Journal, I was always doing other things. So I was also, that's when I started working as a standing contributor for Money Magazine. I did that for like 15 years and other publications. And then I moved to Cleveland 7 years, well, actually 23 years ago. So I've only been at two main newspapers, but I've just always done a lot of freelancing on the side.
Oh, wow. So as a journalist, do you actually go into the office, or is everything kind of home-based?
Well, these days, for the last 5 years, I worked at home. You know, okay. Everything's changed in recent years in the digital age. Everything. So I love working from home.
Yes.
Yeah, but, you know, you're not bored, because some people can't work from home. I know a girlfriend who has a marketing company with several employees, and she initially tried to work from home. It's not for her. You're doing dishes. You're doing this, that, and the other, all that, you know. But as a journalist, you have deadlines, yes, and you're not exactly bored, because you're still out in the streets covering, interviewing people, you know. Okay. But at the same time, you know, I do miss the old days of journalism with a bustling newsroom and everybody vibing off each other and you're sitting in cubicles and blah, blah, blah. But I do love working from home.
I think that comes on a good point, because, you know, depending where you are in your life, right? When you're younger, you want that social atmosphere, right? Where you're able to, you know, socialize and go on breaks and go for coffee or lunch with colleagues. And
you learn from each other. You can, colleagues help you out. They help you out with your ideas, all of it. Your editors are there right next, you know, in the newsroom. So it is a whole different world. And you feed off each other, you feed off energy, you have meetings together. And I you know, we don't do that anymore, you know, so it's a whole different world.
Yeah. And, you know, the last 5 years working from home, I think it's a good space if you're set out for it, right? You've already gone through that working in the office, you've learned from it. And I think once you become wiser and ready, I think you can get way more accomplished doing your own thing at home, right?
If
you have everything laid out and you plan things ahead of time, right? Because there are a lot of distractions at home as well.
There are distractions, but quite frankly, I've spent my entire career as a deadline reporter. And so when you work for a daily newspaper, you think differently, because you always got to produce. You know what I'm saying? You're always on produce mode. I mean, fortunately for me, I've had a lot of columns and standing features, so I never had that daily pressure in many, many years of co-cover this news story, you know?
Yes.
So, but yeah, you're kind of trained in your head, and you don't, you know, the only thing it's not like you can relax ever when you're working from home still, because you're constantly looking at technology. You know, I'm constantly wondering if my editor was reaching out to me or somebody's, you know, that you're glued still, but...
But as long as you are focused, right? And I think a lot of entrepreneurs listening, the challenge is, you know, there's a lot of distractions, social media, news, even ways to, you know, deviate from your tasks at hand, right? Technology today could be a benefit for your business, or it could be a deterrent as well, right? Because it's how you have it impact your life and situation.
Exactly.
So, no, that's great.
But you know what? Everybody's so different. I mean, I've heard people who say they actually get dressed every day. And I read this one book one time about the solo entrepreneur.
Yes.
And this person was saying that they actually got in the car for a second, like as if they were going somewhere, and got back out. I'm like, what? And they put on their work clothes. I'm not doing that. I might look crazy. I'm going to look crazy as heck at home. But yeah, obviously, I have to dress like a reporter when I'm out.
Well, it works for certain people, right? Exactly. So whatever works, you do it for your own purpose and try it, right? Because as an entrepreneur, there's no one set way that's going to fit your ideal, you know, successful business, right?
Of course.
So, no, that's great. So were there people that inspired you to become who you are today? Like, did you have mentors or look up to people throughout your journey?
I don't know. I think we're all different. Like most journalists, most journalists have a lot of jobs. You know, they don't go to two companies and stay forever. I've had lots of opportunities and done lots of things and tons of different columns and all that. So I was never bored. But everybody's family situation is different. You know, everybody's life is different. So a lot of people go from city to city to city. That just wasn't my journey, you know?
Gotcha. So, yeah, I think stability says a lot, right? Today's age, I don't know if stability is the same as it used to be, right?
Right.
Today, like all the millennials coming out of school, do they really plan on being in one job for the rest of their lives? Like
nobody does anymore. Nobody. I mean, my stepson has had so many jobs. You know, nobody does what I just did.
Because they want to discover themselves. They want to figure things out. They want to understand why they're doing what they're doing, right?
Of course. And find new opportunities and make more money, you know, oftentimes, you know.
Yeah. So all that makes, you know, as an entrepreneur, it's the same thing, right? You need to figure out who your customers are, who your right customers are, or ideal customers, right?
Exactly.
So in terms of your career path and having it, was it changed or did you have to pivot throughout the years?
It's changed tremendously. I mean, nothing's the same anymore. I mean, you got to remember how long 30 years is, and it sounds like a lifetime ago. But when I first started my career, we didn't have cell phones, for goodness sakes. You know, we didn't have, I mean, you can't even
pitch desktops. They didn't even have.
I mean, exactly. It's a whole different world. We didn't have laptops. We didn't have cell phones.
Or email.
Crazy. You can't even imagine, you know, so everything has changed since then.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, let's just think about covering crime. It's an app now, but I used to literally walk around with a police scanner, and a walkie talkie, if you can imagine.
Oh, wow.
Like two big things. So yeah, everything's changed since then. And in recent years, obviously in the last several years, more and more of journalism has gone from, you know, looking forward to our Sunday used to be our bread and butter, you know, that we look forward to our big cover stories on Sunday paper. And now you got to produce every day and everything's digital and nobody really finds your news by going to that medium. Generally, they're on Twitter or they find it, you know, or they're on social media. And that's if the story interests you, that's how you find it. And these days, journalists have to wear so many more caps. You know, I used to consider myself a print journalist for many years. Well, that's long gone. You have to be a multimedia journalist. You have to do videos, you know, when you work for a union newspaper, for instance, you know, there was a time when you would never even think to touch a camera. Now you take pictures with your cell phone all day and you hardly ever bother photographers as much, you know, unless it's something that you just, you know, it's just not your world that, you know, darn well, the professional is going to do better than you, you know, but for the most part, everything's changed.
And that's, I think a lot of industries have changed, right? Just because the advent of technology, the internet,
you know, exactly. Google. We're not alone by any stretch of the imagination. I've covered every industry you can imagine in business, from corporate America to manufacturing. My passion has always been small business, so we can talk about that later. But yeah, I've covered it all. And when you think about manufacturing along and technology, how it changed that business and how you really have to have niches, and so much of technology has replaced people in that field, you know? Yeah.
And, you know, going along the lines of like just change, I was in the yellow pages industry. So you being in the print industry, it's exactly the same. It had to transform to a multimedia space or else you'd get clobbered, right? Because no one uses or ingests content the same way that they used to, right? People want things instant or pushed at them now, right? Push notifications.
Okay. So don't tempt me, because you know I'm a journalist, and so you got me real uncomfortable over here answering all your questions, because I'm dying to ask you some questions. You know, like when you mentioned that, my immediate thought is like, well, how did you get yellow pages and what's that about it? Blah, blah, blah. But I'm going to shut up and let you ask questions.
So in terms of like some of the challenges, so over the years, I'm sure you face hundreds of them, right? Can you tell me a couple scenarios or some of the biggest ones that you faced, and how did you overcome them?
I mean, in my industry, you know, I think covering news is easy. You know, as a seasoned journalist, especially, you know, something happens, you go cover it. Whether it's, I don't care if you're covering entertainment, you know, you go, it's a concert, you cover it. If it's crime, if there's a challenge there, you would issue a shooting, you cover it. If there's a news, the mayor or whatever in any city you're in, if there's news or a press conference, you cover it. That's easy. It's, you know, the who, what, when, where, why, the how, and you get two sides of every story. That's easy. For me, though, my greatest challenge has been finding columns, creating columns and features that get people to come back, especially in this age where there's so many distractions, there's so much out there. And so, and even though the digital age has changed a lot in the most recent decade, for God's sakes, but, you know, nothing's really changed. And you always are fighting for viewers and people to watch what you're doing. And so for me, I've created several columns throughout the career, and those are been my biggest challenge.
And I guess for you, like, were there mistakes throughout the way as well? Like, I'm sure you had to endure some challenges that, you know, ventured off to things that you had to record.
Of course. I mean, you know, it's like anything. I mean, I'll tell you some of the columns I've created. You know, there was, or standing features. I've had at one point many years ago, I had a sales and marketing column. That didn't last that long. You know, it might've lasted a few years. I don't remember how long. It's been a long time. I've had a business etiquette column. I mean, if you think about starting something like business etiquette, you know, it wasn't my idea, but I followed through on it. And the idea was to offer my little opinion and get a professional to weigh in on it. But the point is, when you start anything new, the obvious thing is to ask for help. And so, you know, I remember when I reached out to an etiquette type professional, some waltz ballroom dancing guy, and, you know, just known in this community, you know, I was telling him about my idea of starting this business etiquette column. I show up late for the interview at a 5-star restaurant. Who does that? You know, so I called this stranger asking for help, and I show up late.
Oh, wow.
And I left my cell phone. Don't ask me how that can happen. So I can't even tell him that I'm running late. So, you know, all you do is you get in a problem solving mode, and you just, you know,
you apologize, and
exactly,
you, hopefully they take
and
that.
And then you call yourself. I remember saying the least I better do is just pay for this meal so he doesn't even notice it. So I excuse myself, go into the bathroom and say, can I pay this meal before you bring the ticket? He had already taken care of that. So anyway, the point is I've done lots of columns. That was just getting started. And I love that column. Yeah. But I've had a reinvention series. I had a column called My Biggest Mistake and How I Fixed It, aimed at small business owners. And that lasted an entire decade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm going to get into like local business type questions because this is our audience, right?
And
because you've already worked with so many and you probably interviewed so many, you probably have a lot of stories.
Oh yeah, I've interviewed more than 450 entrepreneurs for that column, but I also got a ton of rejection because it was called My Biggest Mistake and How I Fixed It.
Of course. So in terms of advice, because a lot of these listeners are just thinking of starting to become an entrepreneur, right?
Yeah.
What have you learned over the years that you can kind of give insight or advise some new entrepreneurs thinking of starting? What kind of advice?
I mean, you know, there's, when you talk to so many people, if I had to pick like three things for a startup entrepreneur, it would be, you know, plan as much as possible because there's going to be so many distractions when you're starting any new business. But be open to change. You know, you got to be open to change and be open to, you want to plan. So when, if you do get an opportunity, you're not saying, oh, I don't have that ready. I don't have that price sheet. I don't have this. I don't have that. You know, I don't have blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, you got to be open to change and be flexible. Another piece would be definitely seek help. You know, I mean, lots of people have great ideas, but it's not often that you reinvent the wheel, you know? And so why not ask somebody who's already done that? You might put a different spin on it, of course, but seek help, you know?
And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, they have to understand there's a huge community of people that are in the same situation as themselves. And the people that are willing to help out, everyone wants to help other people. Like, it's human nature, right? So if you close yourself from not even reaching out, you don't know what's out there, right? Because there's huge communities. There's people out there wanting to help people, right?
I think that there's so much out there. There's obviously your local chambers of commerce and there's small business. There's women organizations. There's all kind of organizations, young entrepreneur organizations. There's all kind of organizations, so a tech organization or this organization, so many specialty organizations out there. There's just no reason not to seek help. But the fact is, a lot of people do have different reasons for seeking help, not seeking help. I remember interviewing a guy who did not take the traditional business path. He had gone to prison. He had been an alcoholic, and he ended up going into the auto detailing business. And I remember when I asked him to participate in my series, he actually made me change my whole series. I had been doing it for a few years at that point. And he made me do a whole section on where you can find help, because he had made so many mistakes because he didn't want people to know about his background. So he was hiring people under the table. He was doing, it was the list of mistakes. We all make mistakes. Every business owner's gonna make mistakes, but it was a whole different level of mistakes because he didn't want people to know what he didn't know. I mean, I'm talking even one particular thing that made me laugh like mad, only because he overcame it. But he actually somehow had went from nothing to getting a big contract with an auto dealership. And somehow he had some of those cars parked on the street instead of in the lot, and they all got towed. Imagine telling your customer, your first big customer, I might add, that you don't have their freaking cars, you know? And so the first thing you want to do is you try to fix it without telling the customer, right? Well, guess what? It's not in your name, so you can't get it. So you have to tell the customer. Long story short, he got out of that. And I know this is going to be hard to believe, but he actually won that customer back over.
Wow.
And that's, he was like, yes, of course, he apologized profusely. And yes, they said, you idiot, we're never going to do business with you again. But in the end, he was like, you know what? I'm going to do whatever it takes to get your business back. I'm going to do your cars for free for a while. I'm going to do whatever. And he got them back. So, yeah. So I guess my point is that there's a different level of mistakes, and people have different reasons for not wanting to share, because everybody doesn't come from this straight path of, you know, going to college and then they start their business or having family support or whatever, you know?
So I think that's a really good note, because, you know, at the beginning there's struggles, and a lot of people teach you like fake it until you make it kind of thing. I'm more about being transparent and do the honest thing, tell people the truth, because every time you start lying, you dig yourself deeper.
Absolutely.
And it's going to take a lot longer to win them over when they find out that you've been lying, right? So it might as well start off by being transparent and honest and let them know what really happened and what your struggles really are, and be vulnerable. And I think that's so critical advice-wise, right? As a small business
owner, being vulnerable is key, and also seeking help. And when I say seek help, there are so not just organizations out there, but, you know, I've had people to share just getting the right accountant, the right lawyer, the right whatever, you know. If you're in retail, you know, it would help if you find an accountant who's dealt with retail businesses. Because you're an accountant doesn't mean you're the right person for that particular business.
Exactly.
You know, so they won't know the loopholes or the things you should be looking for in inventory. I mean, there's so many areas, but if you just try to wing it, I got this, you know, I got this experience coming from corporate America in this realm. My sister's got this other experience coming from retail. We got this business down. And guess what? You got a couple things down, but you need help still.
So that's only a couple scenarios, right? There's a lot of, you know, groups, like you mentioned, not just localized, but even online today. Like there's
four
groups.
But today's a whole new day.
There's a lot of, like, even books or podcasts or videos, right? Like all these information that was never there 10 years ago.
Oh, absolutely.
They're now accessible. So that's why, like, there's things at your disposal as an entrepreneur that were never even thought of like 30 years ago, because
you know, you're tempting me again. You're tempting me because you know I want to ask you why you started this podcast a year ago. I want to know all your business, but you're tempting me because I, you know, I'm not used to being on this other side here. But you could answer that right quick. Why did you start your podcast?
It's really to give back, right? To educate and impact more people to become successful, because there's so many people that fail and struggle and they don't connect with people, right? So I want to let people know I made mistakes. I struggled. I always had a dream, right? Okay. And for me, it's more now I'm living my dream. I'm actually very grateful, and I want to give things back, pay it forward kind of thing.
I love it.
So in terms of tips, right? I know you basically gave some advice. I know you're starting your own business as well, right? Like you kind of are starting your cannabis.
Yeah.
Forum and events. What have you been doing differently knowing all this information? Like,
I'm just getting started, and I'm going to conferences right now, you know, okay, and learning from other people, because you got to start from somewhere. There's nothing, you know, when you're trying to get into anything new, the first step is to be around people who are doing what you want to do.
Yep.
You know, and so that's kind of my step, you know, and then start networking again. You know, when you are a journalist, for as long as I've been a journalist, I'm used to people coming to me. I'm used to people saying, hey, write about my story, blah, blah, blah. Well, now, and you're wearing a whole different hat. And now I'm like, wow, I'm going to be helping to put on this event. Oh my goodness. I'm going to have to ask these journalist type folks to ask me to promote my event. What the heck? Anyway, so I'm on the other side.
No, it's great. I mean, I can definitely learn quite a bit from you, because I'm starting to put on local events just to kind of help people out. Right. But again, I never really intended to, you know, put on live events, right? Like my whole purpose of doing live events was to practice public speaking.
Okay.
Right? And then, you know, for me, it's like, I'm not making a business out of it. It's really for me to try to learn something new, like as a skill set.
Absolutely.
Get better, right? And as long as I'm enjoying the whole path of trying something different, and I'm still, you know, waking up every day in, you know, happy and passionate.
Absolutely.
I think that's, you know, something that people have to realize, like, it's not always about the money, right? Whatever you do, there's different purposes in life.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, for me, I'm going to this, in terms of learning, I just left 4 months ago. And so I went to a conference in New York, a major cannabis conference then, and I'm going back to New York next month for one aimed at the media, and it's only their second annual because it's such a new industry.
Oh, wow.
You know, about people covering that industry. But yeah, it's, you know, your purpose can't be just about making money. I mean, even with this expo we're doing, our reason for doing it is new in Ohio, and there's not enough information out there. And so initially we plan to do just consumers and workshops all day with consumers. And yeah, we have vendors, but the whole goal was to get information out there. And then we only threw in one business panel with investors and cultivators and blah, blah, blah. And it was, when you don't even promote something like that, and you got more than 100 something people standing in a room, because it was supposed to end at 4 and we started that at 4:30. And when people are willing to stick around on a Saturday, that means you got some. So that's why we're adding a whole different day just on business.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And listen to the audience, right? And what they tell you, right? At the end.
Absolutely. Feedback. People were asking about it. And that's, I mean, if you think about, I mean, I think about all the mistakes I've written about. And it's interesting because everybody makes mistakes. Yeah. But one big mistake sometimes is that when some people are so focused on what they want to do, this is my idea, this is my service, this is all it's going to be, this is my product, and this is how it's going to go down. But if you don't listen to your possible customers or your future customers, you know, the customers out there, and you just could make some tweaks, then maybe we could be a win-win. Yeah. and I think, you know, there's that old saying about follow your passion, the money will come. I believe that, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, you're in a different situation because you've worked for many, many years and you saved up a chunk to start your own business. There's a lot of entrepreneurs that are just starting a business without even any money. So what kind of advice can you give?
You know, I say anything. I'm gonna need a loan from you. What are you talking about?
No, but like going to events and even being comfortable networking, because a lot of entrepreneurs, they might not even be comfortable talking to others, right?
Well, you're right. Networking is key in anything. I mean, I literally have not networked in a long time. And so I've just started like in the last couple of weeks doing intentional networking, and it's been great, you know. But I got to tell you, from what I've learned throughout the years of watching others and networking and writing a column called my business etiquette column, for instance, you can mess up with networking. I mean, you can waste a lot of time going to these networking groups that are not the right fit for you, and you can waste time. But I think another mistake that people make is that when it's all about you, you're not going to do anything. I don't think you should network with saying, ooh, me, this is what I need, you know? But if you go in with the intention of, you know, listening to that person at this particular networking event, and then you immediately try to give back, trust me, it's going to come back to you when you need it.
That's a great point.
You know, and the other thing I got to tell you about networking that's interesting to me is that I think that don't know, we first impressions, right or wrong, we all make them, right? By the time you went from the moment someone walks in a room, you by the them. Way someone talks, by yes. the way they look, we all make judgments, right or wrong, right? And sometimes we make bad impressions. I think one, and it goes back to the mistake, fixing it. But I think of one particular incident where the small business consultant was sharing with me how he was trying to help a new young entrepreneur in a family business. And he thought enough of this young man to invite him on a golf course with a CEO of a bank and two other high-level individuals. So let me get this straight. Why did this knucklehead go out there and hit his shot every time and get right back on his technology? Back on the phone, texting and all that, ignoring this amazing opportunity 4 hours on a golf course with the CEO of a bank. That's called a screw up. You know, how do you fix something like that? Yeah. First of all, he didn't even realize, the person who invited him was just mortified and humiliated and embarrassed, you know, and hopefully he did tell him about himself, because you need to try to fix that one, you know, because some things you just don't know with age. I'm not saying you can be young and be way more intelligent than someone 50 or 60. I'm not saying that. It's not about age. But sometimes, I'm just saying, with this technology world, it drives me crazy. I don't get it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, years of experience, right? And you dealing with so many people and talking to business owners and success stories, failures, that says a lot versus someone that's just starting off, right? They go into these networking events thinking to sell or win a customer over when you should be giving, right? Or building relationships. Like when I first started doing networking, my intention was to connect with one or two individuals, right? And help them out, right?
Absolutely.
Get to know them and build solid relationships with one or two people, right? That's it. Right.
That's great, as opposed to thinking, oh, I'm going to get 10 people from here.
Exactly. Right. It's not realistic goals, right? Like, how do you go in even talking to 10 people? There's hundreds of people there, right? And you need to feel, get to know them too, right? And kind of build that relationship that way. So,
well, I got to give you, on that note, I got to share a quick story. You know, there's in your world, technology, there's a guy who I know who has a company. They do, what do you call the data backup stuff?
Yep.
You know,
Backup storage or?
Exactly, that type of technology company. Anyway, I remember he was sharing with me how I was telling him that I think that business etiquette in this digital age is so important, and people forget about the effects of the personal handwritten note. And we were just having a cocktail, and I don't remember how this even came up, but believe it or not, he actually could vibe with me, because he was like, Marsha, I've been sending out handwritten notes for so long. Do you know how much business has gotten me? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I'll give you an example. So if, say you go to this 40 under 40 event.
Yep.
You know, the 40 top people in your city, doing the darn thing, whatever. He said, he gave me an example. I will do my best at the beginning of that event to meet as many of them as possible. And then when I send a note afterwards, and if I can remember one thing about them, I'll include it. But either way, I always send them a note. Hey, it was great meeting you at the 40 under 40. You know, I was one of the 40, whatever. Best wishes to you. That's it. You know, if I can ever do anything to help you, let me know. He never ever asked for anything. He just says, if I can ever help you, let me know. He said, do you know how much business? It might not happen overnight. It might be a year from now. But people remember that, you know, because the art of the handwritten note in this age is lost, you know. And so if you think about it, you know, we all get our bills in the mail. But think about how excited you are if something that looks like a card actually comes, you know. Yeah. It's just a different day. So no one takes the time. Who does that anymore, Harley? I got this big guy in this area told me that it made me happy, because he said he kept it on his note, and he's all into social media. He's made a huge business out of social media. He's a consulting firm, but he's big time in social media. But it warmed my heart that he said he kept that handwritten note that I sent him congratulating him on his success on his desk, because no one does that anymore.
And you got to differentiate yourself, right? Like Exactly. Everyone that's emailing and doing ads and this and that, well, they're going to get lost with everything else.
And we all have to do that. There's nothing wrong with that. I do send thank you notes all the time too, but with email, of course. It's effective, it's fast, and you know, it's hard to make yourself sit down and write a whole note. It really is. But, you know, it's just a suggestion.
No, it's great, right? Because a lot of people come in to an event or, you know, anything wanting to get business out of it. You got to think differently, right? And
absolutely.
And by giving or helping others, that's where, yeah, you don't reap the benefits right away, but eventually they'll remember you. And that's all that matters, right? It's all about hopefully connecting with someone. So next question I have is, what drove you to become who you are? Like, I know over the years, you've had a lot of different, you know, only two major jobs, but you had a lot of columns and you've become a journalist. What really pushed you? Like, what was your purpose or passion over the years?
I really do just enjoy helping people. I really do. And I mean, yes, you have to, with news, you have to do those basic news stories all the time, of course. This person opened this door. What this person did, blah, blah, blah. You know, but when you can write something that touches someone else and inspires someone else to do some their own, follow their own dream, or lets people know about this person that in the community and no one knew they were doing this great thing, you know, because, and maybe that person didn't even want attention. You know, that gets me excited. I love sharing good news, basically. And so even with my column, my biggest mistake and how I fixed it, that lasted so long. It lasted until 6 years ago when I killed it because I needed a change after talking to almost 500 people, you know, doing it. I took a mid-career break and mid-career sabbatical at the University of Michigan for a year off and came back. But anyway, I guess my point is that in writing that feature, every last one of those stories, while they shared a mistake, they all had happy endings. Mm. And so that's what drives me. I'm so grateful for everyone who shared their vulnerabilities because it is not easy to ask someone to share what's your biggest mistake and how did you fix it. It's just not easy. People worry about being judged. And the only thing they get out of this, is helping someone else. That's it. I'm not giving any money. I'm not giving anything, you know? So that's it. Because everybody wants to talk about success. Everybody. And I want to hear about your success too. But I also want to know about those failures that led to those success.
And every entrepreneur, every business owner has a lot of failures and they have to pivot and they have to learn from it. Because if you delve on those mistakes and failures, you're not going to be successful. You're not going to continue your business, right?
Like, absolutely. You can't focus on being down, but you got to get back up. But if you think about it, think about how many articles you read or how many interviews you've heard, and that person's on top. I mean, obviously, they must be on top for you to want to talk to them, you know, for some reason, unless it's a bad story. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But in business, no one's going to just go say, oh, I hear you haven't made any sales. Let me go interview you. I hear you that you're not even paying your rent. Let me interview you. No one's doing that, right? Yeah. So we're people who interview people who are successful already. But I really firmly believe that people turn off when, you know, they're happy for that person, unless you're just a total hater. But they tune out because they're like, okay, good for them. Good for him or her. But I could never see myself there.
But I think, being vulnerable and connecting with your audience, right? And I think everyone's going to share a mistake and there's going to be others that have gone through or are going through the same situation, right? And by voicing it out or even helping one other person out, it's going to make one person's difference. Right.
Absolutely.
And they won't make that mistake. And I think that's impactful. So don't go after like the biggest, you know, or a huge group of hundreds or thousands of people that you can impact. Start small.
Absolutely. You have
to start small. Right.
Absolutely.
So as a small business owner, I love that. Right. Like just be vulnerable. It's great. So in terms of like over the years, what motivates you to get up every day doing what you're doing and what drives you? Like, and now that you're following this new career path, what excites you today?
I mean, that does excite me. Getting into this space is interesting to me just because it is one of the fastest growing industries in the country right now and in other countries. And it's globally. It's global. It is. There's so many stories to be told, you know, everything from people incarcerated who should not be incarcerated, you know, because so many people are making money out now off of this, you know, and to, you know, how are people being helped by marijuana? How are people, you know, there's just tons of stories, you know? And so I just want to know, and what are the opportunities for people, whether, you know, if they're trying to do a career reinvention and pivoting, you know, because the fact is with a new industry, it's all about reinvention. You know, everybody's reinventing, whether they had to parlay their accounting experience, their marketing experience, their gardening experience, or whatever. It's just simply a new industry, you know, and there's so many opportunities, you know, whether you're an ancillary business like Scott's Miracle-Gro, which is big time into that industry with the hydroponics, you know, because maybe the home and garden might be tapped out. It's probably, you know, you can only go so far with that, but there's this whole big old industry growing, and now this soil company is able to move forward and take advantage of that and grow from there. Or maybe this small entrepreneur who just has this idea to make a better package for the marijuana, you know, whether it's for a small individual use or for, you know, plastic bag or for the big drums that are made in cultivation. There's 50 million stories out there. And so, and because it's a new industry, I just want to be part of it, that growing industry.
Awesome. So yeah. I want to ask you this as well, because you've hosted 500 people locally in a couple months, right? At your last event.
Yeah.
What did you have to do to drum up that many people that are interested in this topic to get them?
Well, we were winging it big time, I must say, but because we only had a few months. We did that in 3 months. And so that's why we're very optimistic that we can triple that with actually a whole year of planning. Because if you can get that in a few months just by using a lot of social media and talking to people and getting the right people involved so they can share with their audiences and that's kind of how that happened. And the fact is that you got to have something of interest. If this is
a topic that was,
you know, obviously, I mean, I don't care how much social media you do, if nobody gives a cookie, you know what I'm saying? But if it's something that people are curious about and they want to know, well, how do you get a marijuana car? Well, how do you do this? Well, how do you do that? And what are the opportunities? Well, hey, I'm a baker. You know what? There's a speaker who's talking about baking and edibles and stuff. You have to hit people from different angles. And see what makes you, well, you know, what would interest you? What would make you get up and pay a little money and to get some information?
Learn a little bit more. So you obviously network with a lot of influencers or people with an audience of people in your tribe, right? People that are interested in that topic, as well as social media, to get people on board.
Gotcha. Right. And it's like anything, you always got to start with some key influencers. You know, I mean, our next conference, we're hoping to get a big name to draw, you know.
As a keynote speaker or someone.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we'll have more time to plan. But it's like anything, you got to see, you know, get outside of yourself and see and listen to people and look at what worked and what didn't work, you know, how we could do things better next time.
No, it's great. It's great insight. And then aside from business, so what are some of the other pillars that kind of has molded you to become who you are? Like, was there a lot of influencers like within your family, personal or business?
I mean, you know, it's like anything. Business is just part of your world. You know, it's a big part of all of our worlds. You know, for me, I'm going through a lot of change on every front. I went through a divorce in the last year. I have a 16-year-old daughter. I've got a couple two grown stepchildren, you know, who have children. I'm in a different phase of reinventing and I'm just enjoying them, enjoying family and thinking about community and ways I can give back. Because I'm at a different stage, I'm ready to get back with the community, you know, through my sorority Delta Sigma Theta and get back active with them and, you know, and give back in different ways. So yeah, there's some things that are interested in me.
And even life, like myself, I'm a father of a 4-year-old, right? So for me, it's more, my focus is really to bring him up to speed and, you know, mold him or help him appreciate what life is all about. Right. So, there's a lot of things I'm learning as well on the fly as a parent, right? But it's a lot of fun. So.
And it makes you smile at the end of your day. You can have the worst day, best day.
Of course.
You got a 4-year-old baby boy who just don't care about none of that. He don't have no bills yet. He just got love and happiness.
Exactly. But that's how life should be, right? Yeah. So that's why, you know, that now I think about how he lives, that's what you should always live like, right? Because he's all the time. So that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I love my job. I love my tribe. I love my staff. I love my clients. But I also love whoever I'm trying to impact, right, and help. Because I do give back now. I mentor a lot of business owners. Just things that actually bring a big smile to me, I think that's worth it. Right.
I mean, you know, exactly. You know, I listen to a lot of positive music. We all do what we do. Some people listen to motivational speakers. I love music, you know, and I keep these positive expressions around. I have a big, big picture frame that says, my goal is to create a life I don't need a vacation from.
Exactly. So when you go to work, but it's not really work and it's more like play and you're just enjoying what you're doing, that's where you know you're at the right, you know, company or job or business that you've built, whatever it is, it's like, it doesn't feel like work.
Absolutely. I mean, Lord knows we're going to make some mistakes trying to get to that point, but you know, as long as we get back up, try it again, you know, keep it moving.
And when you do feel like it is a business or you feel like it is something more, like it's not bringing,
it's not enjoyable, then it's time to pivot.
Exactly. And pivoting is so critical. As a small business owner, that's one of the things that I've always done and I always talk about as well, right? Because your audience may change. You may want to know, like you'll learn from your customers and you may want to change directions because you may want to offer new services or go into different markets or whatever it may be, right? So,
I mean, you know what? Exactly. And with the hundreds of people that I've interviewed for my column, My Biggest Mistake and How I Fixed It, and other in my reinvention series, the biggest takeaway for me is that, you know, the only thing constant is change, you know, and it sounds like such a cliche, but it's so true, you know?
Yeah. And changing and being vulnerable and
it's
learning.
It's not easy.
being an entrepreneur is not easy, right? Like,
no way.
And even holding a job for 30 years or 15 years is not easy, right? In today's world, a couple of years is challenging, especially what's going on. Like, you know, life, there's so much uncertainty in this world today, right? You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know where you're going to get paid, right? So being an entrepreneur, at least you have some control in terms of how.
Well, you have some control as long as you don't do stuff like get comfortable with one big client and then takes over your whole life. And then you know you basically are an employee.
Employee of that one customer.
But you can be an employee for that company. So you have to keep it, make sure you remember those things like, how did I get here? I know this is what I asked for, but maybe I need to have a couple more other clients. You need to have that diverse portfolio because otherwise I don't want to look up and one day they cancel me and I'm out, you know? Yeah. So
all these things you'll learn, right, as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, and
I'm so grateful. At least you're speaking about all these mistakes and things you've heard from other business owners, because there's so many problems out there that people endure,
right? I think it's so important. You know, it makes being vulnerable, because I'm telling you, I remember going to, just in May when I was in New York at this big cannabis conference, and it was huge. It was like 275 vendors, 3 days of workshops, and it was great, you know, but there was, I can't recall the name of the company at the moment, but is from your world in Canada. And in Canada, that particular company was talking about how his business model entailed giving stock to every single employee at the company. But he also talked about all these successes, and it was just, you know, and he had this standing room only crowd, people flowing outside because he was this big name. But what hit me the most was that he shared a few of those mistakes, you know, like using the machine with real weed and ruining it, you know, instead of some other product, you know, and it was just funny stuff. But no one shares those kind of things, you know, and that's what motivates the person who's just starting or the person who's struggling, you know, who's gotten at the growth phase, you know, or, you know, dealing with all kind of other challenges, whether it's working with family or friends. And, you know, they're the obvious target because they're free or young, or you can pay them a little less when you're just starting out, but they can also kill you. But anyway, or having a bad partner, because that can also kill a business real quick, you know? So I guess my point is that anytime anyone is willing to share vulnerabilities, share something that they learned, that they fell down and it was not easy, but somehow picked themselves back up. You know, it just makes me smile because it just is like, wow, there's hope out there, you know?
And it's real, right? So they're genuine and authentic, right?
Absolutely.
Because in reality, every successful person has failed in multiple careers or multiple
every major corporation has failed, you know, and I think that people forget that while your goal may not be to be some major corporation, the fact is every corporation started as a small business. You know, you had to start somewhere. I mean, I think about the co-founder of Office Max, who wrote the foreword to my book. You know, he started out with one store in Cleveland, Ohio, and he built it up to an international company with 1,100 stores. Wow. But the fact is, I mean, when the stories that he shares and the reason he was willing to write a preface to, for whatever you call it, for the book is because, you know, might not be your goal to be that big ever, or maybe not even to get outside of your community, or maybe not do sales online. I don't know what your goal is, but you always have to start small. You have to start somewhere. And so when anyone, it warms my heart when people, whether you're a small entrepreneur or a major force like him who has, you know, sold that company and moved on to many more adventures since then, you know, to give back. I mean, I love it. It makes me happy.
And I think you bring on a really good point because a lot of people are stuck up on being perfect or starting a company knowing exactly everything. But my take on it is go out and do something about it and start it and make mistakes. At least you're already out there and you're ahead of the curve by trying to learn and make mistakes and get up and, you know, figure things out and pivot and make changes and do, you know, go out and try to understand who your customers are and provide better service and all that other stuff, right?
Well, now I'm going to have to be taking all that advice I've heard from 50 million people, including you, and I'm going to have to actually do that.
No, it's great. Right.
It's not easy, you know, because speaking of which, I was like, oh, Lord, my site, I got to work on that. I got to do this, that.
We can talk about that. But yeah, like for us, you know, I really want to thank you so much. You've brought a lot of good, you know, stories and insight because of all the years of experience, right? So I want to thank you for giving this opportunity and taking up some of your time to be on our podcast show. So where can listeners go to learn more about your business?
Thank you so much.
Oh, not a problem. So where can our listeners go out to learn more about your business and some of their...
My name is Marcia Pledger, M-A-R-C-I-A, and my last name is Pledger, P-L-E-D-G-E-R. So any of my social media is just under that, whether it's LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and even my website would be marciapledger.com. And so that's all under just my name, but also where our newest project is the Ohio Cannabis Health Summit. So it's just, that's what it is, ohiocannabishealthsummit.com.
Perfect. Well, thanks a lot. I really appreciate this. And if anybody wants to reach out to you, they can definitely contact Marcia on her social media page or website.
Yay!
Thanks a lot, Marcia.
All right. You take care. I'm coming to visit you in Toronto.
Definitely.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to our latest podcast. Please subscribe to Local SEO Today and tune in to our next episode.